And hello, everyone. It's Scott Tipps again, back from last Wednesday. And it is now Wednesday night. It is the 19th of September. And you may or may not recall, if you were listening a couple of shows ago, that I kept mentioning this book that I had read by this gentleman named Alan Holman. And the book is called Asclepius's Staff. And you may remember I stumbled over the name of the book at the time because I've always, since I can remember, studying Greek mythology and Greek history, coming across this name as the Greek healer, but I never ever had to pronounce it before. And I came up with the, I think brilliant idea to, instead of telling you third hand or second hand about this book, to actually bring the author, Alan Holman, in front of you and have him tell you in his own words what's going on. And with his book and with the studies he's done, he lives in Saskatchewan in Western Canada, and using alternative treatments that he had read about on the internet, he defeated 10 of his father's tumors. Not just one, but 10. And unfortunately, it wasn't enough because his father had also undergone chemotherapy, and he really died of this effect of the chemotherapy drug. Now, Alan sets forth all of this in his book, which I highly recommend that you get. If you know anyone who has cancer, this is one man's search for a cure, and he went through everything. I mean, he considered everything, and he talks about it in his book. But what Alan believes is that there's no place for most chemotherapies and cancer treatment. Now, I know we had on our show before Burton Goldberg, and if you were with me in those early days of my doing this program, you recall Burton Goldberg has a place with a particular kind of chemotherapy. But what I like to do is present various views. And I'm not saying which view is right and which one is wrong, but let you decide and see what you think. It's just information I'm presenting to you here. And we aren't making medical predictions or medical prescriptions of any sort. But Alan, like I said, believes there's no place for most chemotherapies and cancer treatment because he's seen that alternative treatments can get rid of tumors. And that's why he wrote and then self-published this book, again, called Asclepius's Staff, and it's all about the alternative treatments that he learned about, and it's treatments that he believes every cancer patient should use in place of chemotherapy. So, Alan, if you're there, I'd like to welcome you onto the program. How are you?
Thank you for welcoming. I really enjoyed your introduction. I'd like to say that I listened to your previous podcast, and I think that what your other guest was saying about the low-dose specific chemotherapies, I think that what your other guest was saying is something that would be way better than what they're currently doing, and all I really hope for is for them to change what they're currently doing to gradually get more towards doing stuff that's truthful and works.
I agree with you. I think, you know, Burton Goldberg had put a lot of thought into what he was saying, and he had done a lot of research, and he'd seen results. And so he's sort of in a special category. But for the bulk of conventional medicine, I would tend to agree with what you wrote in your book. And I really enjoyed reading the book. I mean, you know, I have to say it had some typos in there, but it's funny. Some of the best books I've ever read have a lot of typos. And so it's almost like a sign of the passion of the author that they want to get the information out there so fast. And you mentioned in the book, which was a big kind of treat to me, my good friend and client, Bill Sardi, whom I had on one of my podcasts, as well in this series. So
it was an article by Bill Sardi about GCMAF, macrophage activating factor,
right,
which had Bill Sardi's email address at the top of it. that article tempted me to email Bill Sardi for more information, and he replied with information that was useful. In fact, I'm convinced that the information he replied with is what got rid of my dad's arthritis. And I heard Bill Sardi on the Alex Jones show shortly after that, and he did really well on that show, and he did really well in the first installment of your podcast. But I've noticed while researching health freedom that I keep on running into articles and audios and videos by, it seems like, the same small community of researchers who I was never really exposed to before I started researching these topics. And it seems to me that this community of people who are awake and active researchers and creators of materials on health freedom, it seems to me that it's too small of a group, really. And we really need to gain numbers against the globalist machine that the mainstream medical establishment is part of. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting because Bill Sardi has always been a bit of a gadfly in the side of conventional medicine. He definitely has strong views. But what most impressed me is that you had made a beeline straight to his information, and it appears in your book, and you considered it very carefully, and you gave him some nice kudos in the book, as I recall as well. Did you get to talk with Bill Sardi directly?
No, well, through email. His article was one of the first things I ever read about hard science-based medicine that the mainstream suppresses. And I want to say that again, hard science-based medicine that the mainstream suppresses.
And so when he said that, and then you took some...
The fact I'm on your show makes me feel like... Yeah?
Yeah, no, go ahead. The fact that you're on the show.
Well, it makes me feel like I've gone in a full circle because Bill Sardi was one of the first people whose articles I was reading on this topic.
And then here you go with this. Just refresh my memory, Alan. When did you first come out with this book? Was it last year?
I've actually come out with several versions of it since 2010. With several different titles that I've placed on various websites while I'm gathering momentum for this current version, which you've read.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I notice it's called Chapter 1 Cancer. Do you have plans to do Chapters 2, 3, and so on?
Well, at the time that I self-published this, I had an ambition to do that because the information I was reading in all the books, you'll notice I have a really big bibliography in the back of the book.
Yeah, I did notice. Yes.
Or at least it's a few pages. But I noticed that the information I was reading from these other researchers on basically the conspiracy, like the Great Global Vitamins Conspiracy by John M. Connor. That's one of the books I cite. And I've noticed while researching this conspiracy that basically there's a lot of illnesses that can be cured quite simply. It's just a matter of having enough money to buy the right products from the health food store.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something. You had in your book, when was it that you first really realized that chemotherapy, you know, as the conventional medical establishment practices it, when was it that you realized how harmful it was?
Well, it was shortly after my dad's first chemotherapy treatment that I was watching a lecture on YouTube by a guy who studies some different issues. I was watching a lecture by David Icke in which he did a segment about why chemotherapy is bad. And it made a lot of sense to me, and I'd never even thought myself qualified to question established medical practices such as chemotherapy until that lecture showed me how poisoning people with chemotherapy fits into a bigger picture. And I studied for a few years before I saw a particular lecture. I studied that particular, I studied like conspiracy material, like globalist agenda, stuff like that. But I studied that sort of thing personally for a few years before I saw that lecture. Well, I saw that lecture very shortly after my dad's first chemotherapy treatment. And so, I tried to tell him not to go for more chemotherapy, but he went for a second chemotherapy treatment, and that put him in the hospital for 8 days when he had several close calls with death. It was after being in the hospital for 8 days that we realized that that he realized and agreed with me that we should pursue alternative routes. So I kind of.
Well, Alan, did he complete the full course of chemotherapy, or did he go segue right into alternative treatments?
He did not complete the full course. They were suggesting that he goes for a couple more treatments.
And this was all in Canada, right?
Yeah.
In Saskatchewan. So go ahead.
It was very shortly after his second chemotherapy treatment, gave him several close calls with death, like immediately after. Immediately after he had all those close calls with death is when they started suggesting that he goes for more chemotherapy.
Well, when you say close calls with death, what do you mean? Like he was, passed out and...
His immune system was extremely low, he nearly died several times.
Let me, Alan, paint a picture for the listeners here. So you weren't living with your father at the time, right?
Yeah, I was living with him at the time.
Oh, okay. So you saw it firsthand and close up, and you dealt with this every single day, right?
Right.
And you were motivated to go online. And the reason I'm saying all this now is because I can just well imagine that any listener out there would feel the same way about, you know, his mother, her mother, his father, her father, or any family member. And if they didn't have the basic information, what would they do? They'd go on the internet and start researching, and they'd come across whatever cures they could find. I think you were very driven to do this, and stop me if I'm wrong. And in being driven, you were so good to find something, some things that actually worked.
Yeah, well, I think that what makes me different than most people who would go online to search for cancer stuff is that before I started dealing with this cancer situation, I studied the globalist conspiracy for a few years with a lot of books, and that kind of gave me some personalities to follow to the information, which a lot of people who aren't really into that sort of information wouldn't have those personalities to follow to the information. So I kind of took on a detective persona, and I started with a blank piece of paper, so to say, and I started investigating. And one of the first things I found was Mr. Sardi's article about GCMAF, which, of course, we had no way to acquire, so we had to immediately start looking for other options.
Right. Well, since then, some sources have turned up for GCMAF, in Europe. So, but that's, of course, too late to have helped your father. But what you must have felt really desperate to want to do all this for your father. And I think it helped a lot that you didn't believe the mainstream media and you didn't believe doctors were necessarily telling the truth, that their way was the only way. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're correct in that. Because my disbelief in them came from reading about an agenda that it plugged so perfectly into.
Right. So, okay. Well, then you went online, you started researching all this, you realized chemotherapy wasn't the way to go. You basically presented the facts to your father, and he agreed with you. And so after a while, when was it you exactly decided to write a book? Was it while your father was still alive or afterwards, or what led you to write
them? Well, actually, there's a funny story about the decision to write the book. And I this is the first time I'm telling this story anywhere. I'd like to get into the premise of the book a little later, but first I want to tell you this funny story. So me and my dad, we were researching all of these alternative stuff, and we were testing things on them, seeing what worked, what didn't work, why things worked, why things didn't work. And while we were doing this, he was starting to, the side effects of the chemo drugs that he took before doing this were starting to kick in a lot more. And I believe that the, okay, you know what, this isn't funny at all, but I didn't even get to the funny part yet. I'm going to tell this story whether you listeners find it funny or not at the part that I consider to be funny. I'll just tell the story. I believe that when his body pH was at the healthy level of above 7.36, I believe that that alkalinity, that healthy body, which is when his tumors were mostly disappearing, I believe that actually, because of part of the conspiracy that I've been reading a lot about, I believe that that actually triggered an effect of one of the chemo drugs that he was taking. And I believe that the effect it triggered was a wasting syndrome referred to as cachexia, loss of muscles, loss of appetite and stuff. And so when he was losing his appetite and he was no longer able to really when he was no longer able to really eat the pills that were capsules that we were getting from the health food stores, he was no longer able to really, really eat those. We started this part I haven't really told anyone. We started using marijuana to get him an appetite, and a person I met on the internet donated a huge bag of the stuff to us, and it was way too much for just him to use, so we shared it. And while we were sharing it, the book just sort of happened. I kind of got out of a long, strange trip and realized I had this book in front of me that a lot of people on the internet were really enjoying. So I never really intended to write this book, and that's just kind of how it happened.
Well, did your dad, how many different supplements did he take? What did he take?
He was taking all sorts of things. I mean, we were using resveratrol, quercetin, IP6, inositol, vitamin D3, flaxseed oil, virgin coconut oil, colloidal silver, pow d'arco, graviola. We were using a whole bunch of stuff at different times, different amounts, vitamin D3, flaxseed oil, virgin coconut oil, pow d'arco, candida clear, graviola. We were using all sorts of things at different amounts and different times and kind of testing and writing down notes. During that long, strange trip I mentioned, I kind of compressed all my notes into a file, called it a book, showed it to a couple people on the internet, and then one of the people I showed it to on the internet say, "Hey, I got a friend who can draw a cover for that."
It seemed to me that in that you had a basic premise that ran throughout the book. Can you share with us what that is?
Yeah. Okay. Now, during this time when I was helping my dad, the doctors were reluctant to show us the printouts of the CAT scan data.
I remember,
From the CAT scans my dad would get every 4 months. We were persistent, so we always ended up with copies of that. I just got to tell people, if you're going to be persistent about something, be persistent and gentle at the same time. Eventually, you'll annoy them from apathy to giving you what you're asking for. So,
you're saying they need to be gentle in their persistence and not hit him over the head with a magazine or book to get what they want? Is that kind of your philosophy?
Yeah, eventually they'll be enthusiastic to get what you're asking for if you're just gentle about it. But the reason I'm saying that is because... We always ended up with copies of the data that we were asking for, even though sometimes it was pretty hard and we had to go through some personalities.
Well, I seem to recall in your book you talked about how some of the doctors actually lied to you about the progress your father was making.
Well, they said it was like a lie of omission. I mean, they'd say part of the truth, but the part they were omitting was, when they'd say it's growing, like all he'd say is it's growing, and then we'd get the data and we'd find out that one of the tumors was growing, but the rest were shrinking. You know what I mean?
The throat tumor was still growing, but you were able to arrest all the other tumors. But they didn't tell you about that. They just spoke of the one. But then the second time you had that, and thank God you took the test results and insisted that you get to review them yourself, which is what all our listeners should do if they're ever confronted with that situation. But then the second time, what they did is they told you it was still growing, and in fact, it had started to shrink.
Well, I just don't like calling people liars on air. I know I gave you those facts in the book, and the facts are as they are, but I didn't really want to call people liars on the radio show.
You can. That's the beauty of TNS radio. If they're a liar, you can say they're a liar. So
they were liars, and they lied on several occasions. So my belief and the premise of my book is that people should avoid chemotherapy altogether and just use the alternative methods I learned about during my investigation, or whatever better things your listeners might learn about during their own investigations. Because even after we defeated 10 tumors, my dad died of a wasting syndrome that can be traced to the... Well, I believe that the particular drug it can be traced to is cisplatin, but I am personally... I don't know if that's the science. I'm really looking into it, and from the way that I personally investigated, I really think that particular drug was the cause. But anyway, he did not die of any natural symptoms of having cancer. It was obvious that he died of the wasting syndrome that was caused by chemo. These are my beliefs. These are what I put in the book. And
You could tell, as I recall from the book, you could tell that there were several factors that were making him or at least indicators of him becoming healthier. And I think this is related to what you were talking about in your book about the relationship between health and alkalinity. Is that right?
Yeah, while experimenting with all the alternatives that made any sense to try, I noticed patterns in how I'd react to various treatments, and those patterns allowed me to extrapolate a theory which seems to me to be true, which states that cancer's worst enemy is oxygen. And I found data to support that cancer dies in an alkaline environment, and the data is sourced in the book to the authors. You'll see the bibliography in the back. One of the books I cite is called... I'm actually flipping through the book. One of the books I cite is called the pH Miracle, Balance Your Diet, Reclaim Your Health. There's another book here called Hydrogen Peroxide Medical Miracle. Now, If you're going to use hydrogen peroxide, you got to use it the way the books say to use them. Don't use them. One book that has a really good way for how to use hydrogen peroxide is The 1 Minute Cure, The Secret to Healing Virtually All Diseases by Madison Cavanaugh. I actually go through a protocol in my book that we use, and the point of that is to use small drops in, like, just a small amount of drops in a cup of water that you drink a few times a day. And it explains in the book.
And Alan, let me interrupt you a moment. That was the hydrogen peroxide?
Yeah.
Okay.
Be sure to talk
into the mic so we can hear you real clearly, because if you turn away from it, it's hard to hear you.
Yeah, well, anyway, so when we were doing treatments to raise the pH of his body odor, which had actually annoyed me for years prior to that, and I'm sorry for mentioning it. Anyway, his body odor, it had vanished, and his overall health was increasing most noticeably. We were using litmus paper, and whenever his body pH was between, 7.3 to 7.5, is when his healing was happening most noticeably, we also use things like chlorophyll for raising pH.
Yes. There's a list in the book, but one of the things that most intrigues me about what you did is the methodology. It's almost not what you picked, but the fact that you went to bat for your father, you researched it online, you kept experimenting. Some things worked well, other things didn't work, but every time you hit a wall, you then made a turn and kept going. You were, as you said, persistent. And I admire that, and I think it's a lesson for all our listeners. If they take away one thing from this program tonight, it's that if Alan Holman can do this, you can do it too, I can do it too, any one of us could do it if we're confronted with this kind of illness on the part of a family member or on the, ourselves or whatever. So, and one of our listeners is asking, is one of your main goals, Alan, is it adjusting alkalinity and acidity balance in the body? Is that it?
Yeah, that's one of them.
And what were the others?
It's overgrown, overburdened pancreas, acidic body, and overgrowth of candida bacteria.
Okay.
I'll get more about that a little later,
sure.
I'd kind of like to say a bit of my opinion about pharmaceuticals.
Oh yeah, we can do that. But let me just ask you, while we're on the subject of acidity, alkalinity, how would you get the body, and then we can go to the pharmaceutical companies, because actually you anticipated me too. I wanted to talk about that as well. But how do you maintain a balance of acidity, alkalinity, or how did you do it in your particular case?
Well, we worked towards that balance, and when we got it, we were staying with the protocol that I mentioned in the book, and I could actually just briefly read that protocol. Basically, on day one, you put 3 drops of 35% food grade hydrogen peroxide in a cup of water with each meal. And on day four, you put 4 drops of 35% food grade hydrogen peroxide in a cup of water with each meal. Each day you increase at a rate of 1 drop per meal until day 25, when on day 25 there's 25 drops with each meal. However, a lot of times, between days 16 to 25, you might actually have to stop at the number that you're doing, because this can sometimes cause the person to get nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if the person gets nauseous, you just decide, like, maybe to skip the next cup, or just stay at the same dose for a few days and then proceed going on to a higher dose. But if you get to the proper pH before you're at the top of the protocol, like with the 25 drops, then just stay at whichever amount of drops you're taking in a cup of water with each meal. But the point, you're also supposed to taper off of that protocol. Like if you're doing the hydrogen peroxide, you're also supposed to taper off of it.
If I may, it sounds like what you're doing by taking that approach is quickly alkalinizing the system in as rapid a way as you possibly can. So you bring the body into an acidic alkaline balance, and then you taper off because you've reached that goal and you don't want to make it over alkaline. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, I've read that if you're over alkaline for too long, it could cause problems. However, from what I read, even a few months at being over alkaline, if it's below 7.8 or 7.5, if that's the level of your over alkalinity, even a few months of that, it isn't actually harmful in the long run. From the stuff I've read, but people should read their own stuff and figure it out for themselves.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, while your father was undergoing the alternate treatments, did he get pharmaceutical drugs too?
Well, at the time he was taking pharmaceuticals for some conditions that he had previously had, and we were gradually tapering off of those. I learned the role that pharmaceutical antibiotics play. You know, I found sources that indicated that 100% of cancer patients have an overgrowth of candida bacteria in their intestines, and that a primary cause of this overgrowth is taking a pharmaceutical antibiotic, even if you've taken an antibiotic only once in your life. So my book includes information that I found out about how to do a candida cleanse diet. And the source of my information about candida is a guy named Dr. Jeffrey McCombs. You can find out more about him on the internet.
And what's his name again? I didn't quite catch the last name.
Oh, the guy I just mentioned?
Yes.
Dr. Jeffrey McCombs. McCombs.
All right. So what do you have against pharmaceutical companies then, or need I ask?
Well, it just seems like the pharmaceuticals repurpose vitamins that are already in the system and nutrients that are already in the system. It seems to me from some experimenting that a lot of pharmaceutical side effects can be connected to the effects of certain nutritional deficiencies. And so if people cross-reference the effects of various nutritional deficiencies with listed side effects of a particular drug, taking those nutrients that are repurposed by the drug instead of...
You're cutting out, Alan, and I don't know if it's you or if it's the... internet on us. Hopefully people can hear me even. Can you just summarize what you just said, please?
It just seems, well, basically, if I were to go to a doctor and get prescribed a drug, I would take that prescription and I would look up the drug on the internet. I would find out what the known side effects of that drug are. And then I would go to a list I have, which is actually in my book, of the effects various nutritional deficiencies, and I would check which side effects are closest to which nutritional deficiencies, and I would, instead of taking the prescribed drug, I would take those nutrients that I believe the drug repurposes. This is all explained in my book. It's what I believe about pharmaceutical drugs. I believe that they repurpose nutrients that are already in the system, and I believe cross-referencing the effects of a pharmaceutical drug with a list of effects of various nutrient deficiencies would tell a person which nutrients to take instead of that drug. And I believe within nutrition is that
your Alan, your use of the word repurpose is not commonly found in the English language. I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. I'm just saying, confessing my ignorance about it. So just so the listeners and yours truly understand, what do you mean by repurpose? A drug will repurpose the nutrients.
Well, repurposing is really the best way I have to explain the mental picture in my head from a lot of complicated stuff I was reading while trying desperately to search for information on this topic. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that I believe that a person will get prescribed a drug for a symptom, and the drug covers up the effects of the symptom. It covers up the symptom, but it doesn't get rid of the root cause of the illness.
Okay. So in other words, the drug really just suppresses
the root cause of the illness. I believe that the root
the drug just suppresses the symptoms rather than treating the cause.
I think that the cause is usually a nutritional deficiency.
And actually, Alan, one of the things I've always contended throughout the program is that anything a drug will do, there's a natural remedy that will do the same thing without the side effects. And I think we see many examples of that. And I think the fact that you helped your father so much with natural alternatives that are mentioned in your book helps prove that point as well. And let me ask you, Alan, do you know how to tell if the hydrogen peroxide solution...
I believe there's no such thing as a side effect, I believe.
True. Yeah, it's a direct effect, isn't it?
I couldn't hear part of that question. It cut out for a second.
Sure.
Could you re-ask it?
Oh, I was really just stating that... my statement was a general one about the fact that anything that a drug will do, a natural cure will do without the side effects. And, of course, I think you're right. They're really direct effects, not side effects. But I'm just using the normal term that people have used. And I was really just asking if that was your experience. Well, I was stating more than asking that seems to have been your experience with treating your father, because you found natural solutions that did more than the chemotherapeutic drugs did.
This really bugs me, because I saw what my eyes natural treatments were working better than what they were prescribing at the hospital.
Yeah. Well, let me do this. On the pharmaceutical end of things, you've made clear in no uncertain terms in your book that you are not a fan of pharmaceutical drugs. In your book, does it suggest alternatives to those pharmaceutical drugs?
I believe that readers of this book are going to be well equipped to find useful alternatives.
Okay. Well, I would agree with you after having read it myself. And one of the other things I found very interesting was in there, you talked about tumors and what's your belief that a tumor really is. And would you share that with us, please, Alan?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. When a pancreas is overburdened, this is what I believe from a lot of reading and stuff, but I want people to take this with a grain of salt and look for the pieces of the puzzle for themselves. What I believe is that when the pancreas is overburdened, say from too much sugar or high fructose corn syrup, the pancreas no longer produces enough digestive enzymes to keep the intestines slippery enough. And the intestines are supposed to be slippery so that bacteria stay in the right balance. So I believe that candida bacteria, which I mentioned earlier, and after effect of pharmaceutical antibiotics, I believe that overgrown candida bacteria is able to burrow tunnels into the intestinal walls and at the times when the pancreas is overburdened. So then undigested, not fully digested food gets stuck in these tunnels in the intestinal walls. Mm-hmm. And the food, that undigested, not fully digested food that's stuck in those tunnels, it goes rancid. And then at the point when it's rancid, the candida eats it or absorbs it, and the candida grows and bursts out of the intestines. And that overgrown bacteria that just burst out of the intestine then floats through the body, and the body recruits macrophages and mutated and atrophied cells to kamikaze attack this bacteria. Ultimately, the attacking cells kill the bacteria, but it becomes a clump of dead bacteria and these mutated and atrophied cells that I believe are referred to as cancer cells, and this clump is referred to as a tumor, and it can be located anywhere in the body. I think that the medical establishment names tumors based on where they are and how they're growing, but they'll name something like neoplasm of the, and then a Latin or Greek word to describe where it is, and neoplasm. Mm-hmm.
You're cutting out, Alan. It's hard to
growth, and I believe. Oh,
yeah, you were cutting out, so I don't know why your connection isn't as strong there, unfortunately. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so can you just say in a nutshell, in like one sentence, very clearly into the microphone, what you think candida, I mean, is this part of the cause for the cancer tumors? What are the I still don't quite understand the relationship of the tumor to the cancer in your view.
The tumor to the candida?
Or to the candida. The interrelationship among the three.
Well, I believe that part of a tumor is a dead candida. And this is explained in my book. Hmm. And I believe that the candida's digestive enzyme called CYP1B1 or CYP1B1, I believe that this digestive enzyme is still present in the tumor. I believe that that metabolism, red fruits and green vegetables, it metabolizes a thing called salvestrols, which is found in red fruits and green vegetables. And when the salvestrols are metabolized, it kind of creates what I believe to be like an anti-adhesive effect, which actually starts dismantling the tumor. And so I mention a thing called salvestrols in my book, which is present in red fruits and green vegetables. And I cite the sources of information for where I learned about salvestrols, and I give a website address to where people can buy them. I don't make money from selling any of these things.
Right. I understand. You're just giving the information and that sort of thing. Okay. Well, let's move on here. And I'm still not totally clear on, it sounds like the tumor is encasing the candida. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I believe that the tumor, which is mostly mutated in atrophy cells, clumped together onto the candida when it escaped from the intestines. I believe that after the overgrown candida escapes from the intestines, it floats through the body, and then the immune system gets mutated in atrophied cells and macrophages or whatever. I believe it gets all of the kind of kamikaze attack the candida, and that gets the whole thing stuck at a different part of the body, wherever it floated to. And I believe that's what a tumor is. And one reason why that's part of my beliefs is because it's consistent with what I've found, which is that my dad was the most was retreating the most of his health at times when we were doing treatments, which.
Alan, can you hear me? Alan, are you there?
Yeah.
Alan.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
We're having a lot of trouble.
Hello?
Yes, listen to me, please. We're having a lot of trouble with your connection. It's a very weak one. I don't know why, but very weak. And we are, you're cutting in and out quite often so that half of your answers are lost to us. And then then you draw a conclusion and we're lost. So it's real important for you to speak in very short sentences and maybe repeat the short sentence so that we get the point, because, this is not a good connection, unfortunately. There's something wrong with your Skype connection there. So we've unfortunately lost some of your information. But what I want to say to the listeners is, as we come near to the conclusion of this hour, is that I do highly recommend that you get Alan's book. And again, we're speaking with Alan Holman in Saskatchewan, Canada, who graciously agreed to come on and talk about his book and what he had discovered in treating his father, and really very much curing him of cancer. But unfortunately, his father had done enough chemotherapy that the chemotherapy did him in. And Alan's book is called Asclepius's Staff, and I got it through Cafe Press, www.cafe, like a French cafe, Cafe Press, one word there, .com. And it's very cheap, probably would cost about 9 or 10 euros at most, and maybe 8 or 9 pounds. And I recommend that you buy, especially for any of you who have family members or friends or yourself with a health problem. It really shows how you can achieve victory. I mean, I think one of the most important aspects of Alan's book is it shows how you can win and how you can beat this thing, and you don't have to succumb to it, and you don't have to listen to the doomsday predictions of your doctors who have not been trained in alternative health care. And
can I give a web address?
Please, yes.
Okay, I think that a good place to send people to is www.jyoga.ca/cancer.php. My friend Joanne put a link to where my book can be bought on her site, joannyankeeyoga.ca, jyyoga.ca/cancer.
Oh, I see. Okay, you know what I'll do? Thank you for that, Alan, is I will put it on the chat line so that people can see what it is. And let me repeat it for those who couldn't hear it. It's, of course, www. And then J as in joy, Y, yoga, like the Indian practice, health practice, JY yoga, two Y's there, .ca/cancer.php. And it's on the chat line. And you're right, that's a better place to buy it. I don't know how I ended up getting it from Cafe Press, but that's...
No, that site has the link to the Cafe Press page that sells it. If you just go to Cafe Press, it'll be hard to find it by searching for Cafe Press. But this has the link to the specific Cafe Press page that sells it.
I see. Is there anything about the book that you would change now, knowing, you know, another year beyond it, that you would make different in the book, that you would have written differently, that maybe you would have added in, leaving the rest the same? What would that be, Alan?
Well, I read some interesting information recently about how the quote-unquote free radical theory is not exactly on par with reality. And so there's stuff that I want to read more about that, and then I make a new edit of my book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you might add something in there that it's not really about free radical theory of aging.
But there are things that
disease.
But there's actually things I delete from my book and reword, and there's some typos that I'm going to fix. But eventually, I will release another version of this that is just a little bit cleaned up.
I'd be happy to help you, Alan. Just let me know.
Thank you. But currently, I'm not really going to be focusing on editing this book for quite some time, because really just thinking about cancer brings back some depressing memories, and it'll be some time before I can really be more active in trying to spread this information.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's an excellent point. Well, we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I really want to thank you, Alan, for taking the time out of your day to be online and share some of the thoughts and research that you've put into your book. Again, I highly recommend that people go and buy Alan Holman's book, Asclepius's Staff. And I also want to remind people that if you will stay tuned next week, we will have a specialist on the use of far infrared sauna with autism, who will be on this program a week from today. So tune in for that. But Alan, thank you very, very much for taking the time. And I really appreciate it. And please stay in touch with me, because I want to see what other developments come out of this book and out of your research. And because you seem like this incredibly diligent guy, persistent is actually probably an insult to you, because you're more than persistent and extremely dedicated to helping people you love get well. And I have to say, your book was a real inspiration, and I think it would be an inspiration to others and sort of give them hope when a lot of them don't have it. So thank you for having written it, and thank you for having been on the program. You're an incredible guy.
Thank you for saying all that.
And okay, everyone, this is the time where I have to say goodbye. And I appreciate all of you coming to the internet and listening to this program. And if you have any questions, we might have 1 minute for anyone who might have a question. But all right. So some are complaining that the sound goes off at about 10 minutes till the hour. And this happened last time, I think, as well. I don't know why that is, but I'm sure it'll be worked out. So I want to thank you all. And until next week, you stay good, stay healthy, and stay tuned for Mr. McGuire, who is on and up next. Okay.